We're holding on Kuf Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, five lines from the end of the narrow lines. We've been learning about the various dinim of Matnas Shechiv Merah, but the last thing we learned about, actually, which now the Gemara is going to deal with a little bit more, is the concept of Mavrachas. We talked about yesterday where you can have a woman who's getting married, she doesn't want that her nechosim should go to her husband, meaning that while they're married, they would become nichsim malug, or if they're written into the ksuba, they'd be nichsit zayin barazel, and if she dies, then he might yarshin her. So she wants to avoid all of that. So instead, she's mavrachas. She wants to make that those nechosim stay run away. Literally mavrachas meloshin kibarach ha'om, like to make them run away, to make them escape from her husband's control. So what she does is, then before she's getting married, she's writing out a shtar, giving those nechosim to somebody else. So we learned yesterday that it would have to be that she writes out only if she writes out all the nechosim, then afterwards, after her husband dies or divorces her, then she'd be able to get them back. But if she had given only some of them away, then similar to a matnas shechiv merah, where we said there's a distinction between all or some, there would be a similar distinction as well. We touched on also, Rashbam had mentioned in that connection, a further machlokas within that between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it's enough to just write a shtar for somebody else, and according to the Chachamim, she would also have to write in there, Mehayoyim v'lech she'eritza, that this Natana should be in effect as of today, whenever I want, meaning whenever I want it to take effect, it should take effect retroactively to now, and therefore, since she doesn't want, in the end, then it never ends up taking effect. And so we said there's this difference also b'kulon and b'miktsasan. So if she writes all of them, then the lakeach is not koina, and on the other hand, the husband doesn't end up getting it either. So therefore, that's a way of mavrachas. It's a way of that the other person is not koina, but her husband doesn't get control of it either. But if she doesn't write all of them, if she only writes miktsas, then like the Chachamim say, she would have to write mehayoyim v'lech she'eritza. So now talking further about that case of some of these cases of mavrachas, and then soon we're going to get back to cases of matnas shechiv merah. So we have a simon, zutra imei da'amra mitalkeach.
Is it legal, a pitara, if the husband is a nani, he's a poor man, and or he has many children, and already...
Legal is
what
legal.
What does the Torah say about that?
If she writes out such a thing, and it's done kadas or kadin, then it's legal. Is it the right thing to do under such circumstances? Maybe not, but we have to first deal with what's valid, api alocha, and what's not, what works, api alocha, and then we can talk within that a person going lefinim b'shuras adin. So, Simon Zutre Ime de Amram Mitarki Achvaser of Tuvi, Vreb Dimi, Vreb Yosef, these are all keywords of the next few stories that the Gemara is going to bring that have to do with these matters of women writing out documents, giving their nechosim to other people. Some of them are mavrachas, some of them are matnas shechiv merah. So, the first case, Ime de Rav Zutra Bat Tuvia, Rav Zutra Bat Tuvia's mother, she was going to be remarrying, Kasvinu L'michsa L'Rav Zutra Bat Tuvia, she was, Ksatinu rather, it's supposed to be, that would be the feminine form, so Agoras Habach corrects it to that. So she wrote out her nechosim, a document giving her nechosim to her son from her first marriage, Rav Zutra Bat Tuvia. And the reason she did that is, this is a case of mavrachas. Because she wanted to marry Rav Zvid, and she actually said so. When she wrote out this document to Rav Zutra, she told him explicitly, the reason is because I'm going to be getting remarried to Rav Zvid. I don't want that he should end up taking those nechosim, and again, they're going to become nichsim malug, and if I die before him, he's going to yarshim me, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, she's doing this mavrachas business. And she told Rav Zutra that in so many words, which we're going to see that from the continuation of the story. We have to say that because that becomes important later on in the story. So she wrote out such a document, because again, she's getting ready to marry Rav Zvid. In Siva, sure enough, she ended up marrying Rav Zvid, Vigersha, but later on Rav Zvid divorced her. So now she comes back to her son, Rav Zutra, and says, I want the Nechosim back. So the case came to Rabbi Bar Abaya to paskin about it. The question is, does she have the right to get them back, or does Mar Zutra have the ability to argue that it was an irrevocable gift? You could say, you have to know what the din is. Obviously, you could say, his mother wants it back. Wouldn't it be the right thing for him to do? Fair enough. But first, let's find out what the din is, and then we can talk about what he should be doing with Fenim Meshuras HaDin, or what he should be doing with Tzad Kibbut Aim, and so forth. There you have other considerations also. You were mentioning before, what if her new husband is poor? You could ask the same thing. What if Rav Zutra Bar Tovia himself is poor, for example, and he needs these nechasim for his own family? Whatever. We need to know what the din is first. So they came to Rabbi Bar Abaya. Omar, so Rabbi said, we've talked about before, by the way, as far as the name of Rabbi, where the Shalach Kodesh says the name should actually be pronounced Bevi. There's actually a person of that name mentioned in Sefer Ezra. So apparently the name was used in later generations also, including in this one. Anyway, so they came to the Bibi or the Bevi Bar Abaya. Omar, so he says, Mishum Insuri, we have to say, the reason for the Matana was because she's going to get married. Baha in Siva, he or she got married, So all it is, if she hadn't gotten married, then the matana wouldn't take effect. Now that she got married, then the matana should be in effect. She said that she was going to, she said that she's giving the matana because she's going to get married. Well then, now that she got married, then the matana should take effect. What's the difference? That now afterwards she got divorced, says Rabbi. But Amalei Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, says to Rabbi, how could you say such a thing? We have this expression, we have it in a few places. In Shas, we had it in fact earlier in our Masechta as well, where he tells him, earlier in our Perek, we had Mishumda Asisu Mimulai, because you come from Mulai, Amitu Milya Mulyasa. Therefore you say words that are Mulyasa. So it's a play on words. What is Mulai? So first of all, Rabbi Bar Abaya, Abaya himself, and therefore obviously his son Rabbi, the Gemara tells us in a couple of places, was descended from the family of Eli HaKoyen. And we know the Psukim tell us that there were very harsh nevuos set against Eli HaKoyen and his family because of the way that his sons Chofni and Pinchas were behaving in the Mishkan and Shiloh, which led to its destruction. Part of it was that they were going to die young. The Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah and in Yevamos that there's an exception to that if they're Osik Batoda with different opinions there, whether with or without Gimlas Chasadim. And the Gemara mentions, for example, that Rava, different Gersois, and Abaya were both from that family, and Abaya ended up living up to 60 because he was Osik, but Torah over Gnos Hasadim. So therefore, Sir Abhuna Breder Yeshua is telling him, you come from a family of Mulai. So the Rashbam here explains Mulai is the name of the place where many people of that family lived. He brings from a medrash from a couple of hundred years earlier where the mayor one time visited a place called Mamla and he saw that there were no old people over there and he realized that they were from the family of Eli and so forth. So therefore, said Rabbi Bar Abaya, his family eventually, apparently some of them migrated from there to Bavel. And therefore, Rav Huna is referring to that. The other possibility is the word Mulai means people who are cut off. Means people whose lives are cut short because of this gzera on the family. It could even be both, of course. It could be. In token of that is why they called the name of the town where many of them settled, they called it Mam. Whatever. So he's saying because you're from such a family, therefore you say things that are muyosa. So muyosa, the Rashbam explains, means things that are balmum, things that have a flaw in them. In other places, Rashi explains that it means cut off words. Same idea. In other words, either way, the point is, Rav Huna Breder Rav Yeshua is telling him that what you're saying is not correct. There's a mum in it. It's cut off. Whatever. It's not correct. You're missing a factor over here. Afilu manda omam avrachas koni. Even according to the opinion that it's possible to do mavrachas, again, this refers back to that machloikas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. So the Rashbam says yesh oimrim somewhat. Where do you see lamanda omar? Where did we find an opinion to the contrary that it doesn't work? So first he says maybe there's a Gemara in Bava Kama that bears on it, but no, that was a different case. That was while her husband was alive, she wrote out a document giving her nifs and malug to her son that he would be zoicha in it after her husband dies. That was a different case over there. So no. When we say afilu lamanda omar. What it means is even the Chachamim who disagree with Reb Shimon Gamliel and say that the only way it would work is if she wrote Mehayyim al-Sha'erza, even they would agree in this case. And Tosfos explains somewhat differently. We're talking about over here where she wrote only mixtus nechosim. We're talking about she wrote only some of her nechosim. If she gave all of her nechosim, then yeah, then we're saying, as the Rashbam had brought before from the Gemara and Ksubas, everybody would agree that it works. So in short, we're talking about she gave some of her nechosim to Rav Zutra, not all of them, and she hadn't written this lashon of mehayoyim v'lachsha eretze. Nevertheless, so therefore, that's why Rav Bibi Bar Abaya thought to say, well, in that case, then that's it. She got married, she fulfilled the tanai, and therefore the gift is a gift. But Rav Huna Breda Vishu is telling him no. Even the opinion that says that she would be koina without anything further, without having written that lashon or anything like that, that would only be where she didn't actually say explicitly why she's doing it. She would give that document, and she doesn't say that she's doing it because she's getting married. So we don't know whether it's to be mavrachas or for some other reason. Here she clearly said the reason is only because she's getting married, and the intent is that she's going to get it back after if the marriage is over, if her husband dies before her, or if he divorces her. Here in this case, she was married and she was divorced. So it's very clear from the way she phrased it originally that yes, she means to get it back, and therefore Rav Zutra doesn't have any rights to keep those nechosim. They do have to go back to her because it's very clear that that was her intent, because she actually said so, that she's doing it only because she's getting married. Therefore we understand that it's a matter of mavrachas. Next case. Image of the Rami Bachoma. Then you have a case involving the mother of Rami Bachoma. But Uta,
one second before we move to the next case,
yeah.
Why nobody asked the question, well, if she really wanted to get them back, she should have stipulated that very clearly at the time, saying that
that's
she's going to get married.
Well, that's the thing. Rav Huna Breda Rishua is saying, because she specified that she's doing it in order to get married, then we understand why would she be giving a gift like that before she gets married? It must be in order to be mavrachas. And therefore, once that's not a factor anymore, once her husband is out of the picture, in this case because he divorced her, then there's no reason for that anymore, and therefore it's tantamount to her having said that I'm getting it back afterwards. So the Ritva explains that more clearly. Even though she didn't say almanas, it's very clear that since there was a gilui das over here, since she specified that it's in order to get married, then therefore that's reason enough for us to revoke it and for her to get it back when her husband divorces her. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if she's going to get remarried to someone
if she
else,
wants to get remarried
divorces
to get another husband, then she'll do the same thing again. Or maybe she won't. I mean, you know, it could be there was some particular reason why she figured she has to be mavrachas from Rav Zvid, which wouldn't apply necessarily if she marries a third husband. We don't know. The Gemara doesn't say that point, but whatever the case, if she's going to get remarried again after the marriage to Rav Zvid, then we'll deal with that then. But right now, at least the fact that she was clear that it's mavrach, that it's only for the purpose of mavrachas, means that when she gets divorced, then she gets it back. Okay, let's go on. Next case. Ime de Rami Bachoma. Rami Bachoma's mother, Bu'uta Kasvesinu Lenichsa Rami Bachoma. In the evening, she wrote, one night, she wrote out a shtar giving her nechosim to her son Rami Bachoma. But Safra, the next morning, Kasavisinu Lerav Ukva Bachoma. She wrote out that she's giving the nechosim to another one of her sons, Rav Ukva Bachoma. Also, Rami Bachoma, Kamedir of Sheshis. So Rami Bachoma came for a din Torah to Rav Sheshis. I was the first one who got the bequest. So Ukme Benichse, and Rav Sheshis said, sure, you have the right to have the Nechosim because she gave it to you first. And by the time she gave it to your brother, Rav Ukva, it's too late. You already have it. Also, Rav Ukva Bachoma, Kamedir Rav Nachman. But meanwhile, Rav Ukva Bachoma went to ask Rav Nachman, Ukme Benichse, and Rav Nachman asking that Rav Ukva is entitled to the Nechosim. So now we have two different Rabbanim giving two different psakim. So we have to figure out what is the halacha.
Isn't there a din? You're not allowed to see two different opinions, two different dayanim.
No. Each one over here went to a different dayan. Each one over here went to a different dayan. So to ask.
Okay.
And so now the dayanim themselves have to figure out what is the halacha. So Rav Sheshes, like Amedi Rav Nachman, so Rav Sheshes went to ask Rav Nachman what's going on. Amalei says to him, my time Ukman Mailer of Ukva Vachoma. Why do you give Rav Ukva Vachoma the possession of the Nechosim? After all, Romi had it first. Imishum de Hadraba, you're gonna say because the mother changed her mind, how does that work? Vahashchiva. In the end, she died. The story was, in other words, after she, we couldn't go and ask her anymore, what did you want in the end, because she died. So Rav Sheshes takes the view, once she had given away the first one, as Matnas Shchivmara, to Romi, then it's too late to change her mind and give it to Rav Ukva. So you can't say she changed her mind. So that's it. It should be irrevocable, and it should stay by Romi. Amalei, sort of Nachman answers him, Hochi Oma Shmuel, you should know that no, Shmuel said differently. Kol she'ilu omad choizer, in any case where a person gives a matana, and the din is that if he recovers from his illness, he would be able to retract, and that is true of a regular matnas shchivmara, when a person, as we've been learning through these last two dafim, when a shchivmara gives away all his nechasim, im omad choizer, if he recovers from his illness, then he gets it all back. So in any case like that, Rav Nachman says, Shmuel says, he would also be able to retract the matana while he's sick. So therefore, so the mother in this case, yes, eventually she died, but nevertheless, as long as she's still alive, she does have the ability to retract it and to give it to somebody else. So Rav Sheshes says, fine, I know what Shmuel says, but Eimer d'Amar Shmuel la'atzmai, you know, maybe Shmuel is only talking about where he wants to retract the matana to keep it for himself. So then you could say that he has the ability to change his mind until he dies. But la'achar mi Omar, did Shmuel say the same din would be where he does not planning to keep it for himself, but to give to somebody else, as in this case? Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, yeah, the Fedosh Omar Shmuel, bein la'atzmei bein la'achar. Yes, Shmuel, as a matter of fact, said that this din would apply whether he plans to keep it for himself, in other words, to revoke the whole gift entirely, and he's going to keep it for himself, or whether he wants to change his mind, who's going to get it, and give it to the other. Yes, that's how Shmuel said. So therefore, in short, the halacha in this case would be that Rav Ukva would end up getting it because the mother changed her mind, and she has the ability to do that, as Shmuel says. So
any matana, regardless of the health conditions or any other situation, that's the halacha.
Okay, so the Ritva talks about over here that you do have a case where a shivmana gives it with a kinyan me'achshav, where there it wouldn't work. If he recovers, then he can, but otherwise, when he's sick, he wouldn't be able to. But no, as far as a matnas body doesn't take effect just on his say-so anyway. A matnas body requires a kinyan, and once there's a kinyan, then yeah, he can't change his mind. The kinyan's already been done. The whole point we're talking about over here is a matnas shivmana, where only the verbal statement is necessary for it to take effect. Well then, a later dibur of his dibur mevatel dibur, the later dibur that he says that he wants to, or she says in this case, that they want to revoke it, is enough to then transfer it to somebody else. That works. The Rashbam, by the way, points out that there's this very similar story in a Gemara in Ksubis, where also involving Romi Bachoma's mother and involving writing out shtaris to Romi Bachoma and Ukva respectively. The difference is that there the Gemara says that shuda de daini, that there it's up to the dayanim to decide, it's up to the discretion of the dayanim to decide which one gets it. And the reason is because they're both dated on the same day. So the Gemara mentions there, and in some other places in Yerushalayim, they would put the time when a shtar was written as well, but everywhere else they would not. They would just put the date. So when you have two shtaris, one in Romy's hands and one in Rav Ukva's hands, both bearing the same date, and each one saying that he gets the nechasim, then it would be a matter of shtudah d'daini, where you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in a number of places in Shas. What does that mean exactly? Does it mean it's completely up to the discretion of the day? We've learned about it before. Does it mean that it's completely up to the judgment of the dayanim? They can choose whoever they want. Does it even mean that one of them maybe can try to influence the dayan in his favor? Or does it mean that the dayanim have to try to figure out what was more likely the intent of the one who gave the bequest? In any case, the Rashbam says there, that's talking about a matnas bori. Here we're talking about matnas shivmara. So there's your answer. With a matnas bari, first of all, if there was a kinyan, he can't change his mind. But if you have two shtaris from a bari that came out on the same day, that are dated the same day, then it's going to be, then it's not a given which one is going to get it. It's going to be up to shudra de daini, however we define that. Whereas here, we're talking about matnas shivana, and it doesn't really matter, therefore, that Ashbam says whether it was one day or 2 days. Because again, they have the right to revoke it as long as they're alive, given that there was no kinyan or anything involved. Which actually, the girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara over here is that one was in the evening and the other one was the next morning, in which case it's all on the same calendar date. But there is actually, on the side over here, it brings an agos hatsiyonim from the she'iltis, which actually has the girsa the other way around. The first one was in the morning, the second one is in the evening, which brings out the Rashbam's point more forcefully, that it was two different days, because after all, in halacha, a new day begins in the evening, and nevertheless, we still say that it's considered, that she can revoke it, and it's possible for that, to work, because, again, because here we're talking about a matnas shivmara, and they have the right to revoke it any time, and they have the right to revoke it any time they want, given that there was no kinyan involved. So that's the second case that we have over here involving all these cases we're dealing with are with a woman writing out, which is probably why the Gemara grouped them all together. Okay. Next. Another case. Imed Rab Amram Chasida, the mother of Rab Amram Chasida, Havala Meluga de Shtaroi. She had a Meluga of Shtaris. The Rashbam gives two possibilities what a Meluga means. One is that it means a bundle of Shtaris, and the other one is that it was a case, a briefcase or something full of Shtaris. Whatever. She had, these are Shtaris, the pastures that people owed her money or whatever. So Kika Shachva, before she passed away, Amra, she says, Lehavila Amram Bri. I want all of this, I want this bundle of shtaris or whatever to go to my son Amram. Now, the Rashbam brings two possibilities. One is that there was a kinyan, or the other possibility is that this was all of the nechasim that she had, and in that case, then it's a classic matnas shivmara. Well, also Achola Kameda Rav Nachman. So Rab Amram's brothers came. To Rab Nachman to say to Taina, why should Rab Amram only get it? Why should Rab Amram exclusively get it? Omrule, they argued. V'holei Moshach. After all, Rab Amram did not do meshicha on these shtaris, so how could he be zoicha in it? When it comes to a shtar. When it comes to a shtar, we've learned earlier in the Masechta, when it comes to transferring shtaris that. You need to write out the shtar needs to be written out, and you need to do mesira. You need to hand them over to the other person. So here we're using the word meshicha, but we're actually using the term meshicha a little bit loosely. What we really mean is mesira. We mean that he should hand over that she didn't physically hand over the shtaris to Rav Amram. So therefore, the brothers are arguing how could he be kind of them. Rav Nachman explains to them, he says to them, that doesn't matter. What a shchivmana says is considered as though it's written and handed over, and therefore, so in other words, yes, Rav Amram is koina those shtaris just on his mother's say so. No further kinyan or no further mesira is necessary, even though, unlike in the regular case of transferring ownership of shtaris to somebody else, where you have a lot of details involved with that, what exactly is necessary, and Rav Nachman himself had said earlier in the Masechta that you need to do Mesira, that you need to write out a new shtar to say that the previous shtaris are handed over to this person, and you need to do Mesira, but here Rav Nachman is saying it's a matnas shivmara, so therefore it's different. So yes, Rav Amram is fully koina those shtaris. So he's kind of them, in short. Another case, Achse did Rav Tuvi bar Masna. Rav Tuvi bar Masna's sister, Kasvasinu l'nichsa l'Rav Tuvi bar Rav Masna b'tzafra. So one morning, she wrote out her nechassim. She was sick, and she was a shchivna, and she wrote out her nechassim in a document to her brother of Turi by Masni in the morning. Lepanya, that evening, also Rav Achadboy by Rav Masna, who was also his brother, they're both the sons of Rav Masna. So her brother, Rav Achadboy, came with a complaint. Bochalah, he was crying. Omalah, he says to her, Hashta Amri, you know what? It's not so much that I'm worried about that I'm not getting the Nechosim, but think of what people are going to say. People are going to say, Mar Tzuvim Rabbanan, Umar Lav Tzuvim Rabbanan. They're going to say, you know why the sister gave to the Turi only among her two brothers is because the pastor said, obviously she didn't have children. If she did, then her children would be yarshining her. In any case, people are going to say that, you know why she gave to Rav Tuvi? Because he's a Talmud Chacham and I'm not. So please don't do that. So sure enough, Kasvasinu Niale. So she wrote out a document giving it to him. And then she died. Now, you could argue that that means the pashtus, it sounds like she gave everything to him instead, but in that case, actually, Rabbi Hanan Wasserman deals with the question, actually. In that case, how could Rabbi Chaboy do that? There's a concept the Gemara elsewhere calls Oni HaMahapich B'Charora. You have one person is trying to get something and somebody else goes and snatches it away from him, even though he hasn't made a kinyan on it. Nevertheless, the Gemara says you're not supposed to do that. So he brings up a couple of things. First of all, Rav Tuvi never asked her to do it in the first place. She did it on her own, so it's not Oni HaMahapich B'Charora. And also he goes on to say that, one way or the other, people are going to be moitzi laz on one of them. If she gives it all to Rav Tuvi, people are going to say Rav Achadboy is a no good nick. And if she gives it all to Rav Achadboy, then people are going to say Rav Tuvi is a no good nick. Who kodim l'chol adam? If the only way to prevent Lashon Hara being said about yourself is to get somebody else involved, then there might be a heter for that. So therefore, maybe Rav Achadboy has a right to do that. More preposterous, of course, you could say, and the commentary Yosef Das over here brings this exactly this point. Maybe you could say Kasvistinu Niale doesn't mean she wrote him all the Nechosim. It means she wrote him half the Nechosim. She's sure enough she's going to share them equally between the two brothers. Also Kamed Rav Nachman. So Turi came to Rav Nachman to ask again, how could she do that? Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, same thing as we said before, Hochi Yom HaShmul, Kol She'ilu Omad Choyzer, any case where if he recovers, he would be able to retract the gift, which is a case of Matnas Shchivna, Choyzer V'Matnas, and then he can also retract his gift even when he's still sick, so like the case before, so therefore, yes, your Rav Achadboy is entitled to the Nechosim, or if we say that it means she split it between the two of you, then each of you gets half the Nechosim. As far as the previous case, as far as the case with Rav Amram and the bundle of shoris, by the way, a couple of achronim deal with the question. We anyway had the this was there we're talking about that there we're talking about that she wanted her son to inherit it. Now we had before the din of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha that says that when it comes to one child among one son among all the other sons, you're allowed to do that. You're able to give a Yerusha to one and disinherit the other ones, and it works Meloshim Yerusha. So that being the case, why are the brothers complaining and saying that Rav Amram didn't do Mashicha on the Shtaris? Anyway, and why is Rav Nachman telling them it doesn't matter, do a Shchivmerak Ksuvim V'chemisurin? Why didn't he tell them, listen, we have Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha's din that she would have the right to do that to begin with, even as a matter of Yerusha. And Yerusha, of course, you don't have to do a Kenyan. So here also Rabbi Hanan Wasserman talks about that he wants to say that, first of all, that din applies only for a father bequeathing to his children, because the din, we learn after all from a case, from a pasuk, that talks about the father bequeathing, but then he says that it's a little hard to say that. So he leaves the question open. Then you have Rabbi Aaron Steinman, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, passed away a few years ago. He gives another answer because Rabbi Yochanan Broicha's din may not work by a davar shaloi bala olam. So therefore, a shtar, you don't have the actual nechosim yet in your hands, you only have the shtar. So therefore, it may not work for shtaris, and therefore Rav Nachman had to resort to the Dibur Shchivna principle. So that was in the previous case. With Rav Amram, again, with our case, with Rav Tuvi and Rav Achadboy, it's a different consideration. They were also, her brothers are yarshining her, of course, but there she wasn't saying as a matter of Yerusha. It was a matter of Matnas Shchivna, and the point is that she has the rights to retract her gift.
You can disinherit all the other children
from the previous parak. We had a din of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha who said, and the Gemara ended up paskening like him, that a person is able to say, for example, I want only one son out of my other sons to yarshin me, and that would work. He can't do it to the chelik b'chorah, actually. He can't take away the chelik b'chorah from the b'chorah, if there is one, because the Torah specifically says he can't. But other than that, he would have the ability to do that. Only we said before, we learned in the previous parak a lot about this, that was only with one person that he says is Roy Liyosha, is one of the people who right now is in line to Yarshim. So you can say he has a bunch of sons and he gives it to one son out of all of them. Or he has a bunch of daughters and he gives it to one daughter out of all of them. It wouldn't work, for example, to say a daughter ahead of the brothers as a matter of Yerusha, as a matter of Matone, he can do whatever he wants. But as a matter of Yerusha, it wouldn't work because a daughter is not going to Yarshim where there are sons.
You can do that even when there was two mothers and one father?
Yeah, that doesn't matter as long as they're all his children, yeah. And you have the Takana de Rabbanan, you have the Takana de, you have the Tanai Ksuba of Ksubas Benin Dichrin, so I don't know if you can override that with this kind of thing, but other than that, we're talking about where you don't have such considerations. Yeah. And we learned about it at length in the previous parak. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Another case. Achse de Rabdimi bar Yosef, Rabdimi bar Yosef's sister, Havala Piska de Pardesa. She had a small plot of land where there was an orchard or a vineyard or whatever. Kol Emes to Havas Cholsha. Now, whenever she would fall sick and she figured that she might die soon, have your Machne Aloy Nihale, she would be Machne to him with a Machne Shchidmera. And the chitaima, and then when she would recover, have a sadrabah, then she would revoke the gift, because this was all of her nechosim, and then we learned before, if the shchivna gave all of the nechosim, then they can revoke it when they recover. So this was happening again and again. Zimna choda cholsha, one time she was sick again, shocholei, so she sent him a message, tokni, come make the kinyan, and then let me do the matnas shchivna. Sholach, so Rabdimi sent her back a message, Loi Be'ina, I don't want to bother at this point. We keep going through this whole cycle again and again. Why should I bother? Whenever we can, there's this Hashem, you're going to recover, and then I'm not getting anything out of it anyway. Sholcholei, so she sent him back a message, Tokni Kolheich the boys. You know what? Fine. Be koine it in any way that you want. You can be koine it with a Kenyan gummer in a way where I won't be able to revoke it. So then it's worth your while. Ozel Shaira. So Rabdimi figured, you know what? Then in that case, let me make sure that it's a matnas shchivmer of the miktsas. And as we've been learning over the last few blots, where it's the miktsas, where he's giving away only part of his nechosim, then it'll be irrevocable no matter what. So Ozel Shaira. So Rabdimi went and left some of the field, some of the orchard, whatever, in her hand. That way it'll be matnas shchivmer av miktsas, and therefore that way he figured that she won't be able to revoke it. The konumina, and sure enough, he made a kinyan on it as well. Ki kaima, when she recovered, hadrava, she wanted to revoke the gift again. So they came to Rav Nachman, so she came to Rav Nachman. She came to Rav Nachman to demand, I want the matona back from my brother. Sholach leito. So Rav Nachman sends a summons to Rav Dimi, come to Beis Din. But Rav Dimi didn't want to come. Omar, he thinks to himself, my AC, what's the point of me coming? Hoshaira of economy, no, what kind of a case does she have? It's pretty open and shut over here. She left over some, she kept some of it was left in her hands, Vekonumino, and we made a kinyan, so it's only a matnas shchivmer av miktsas. Obviously she can't be choizer, so why should I bother? She's stam hacking a chaynik in front of her Nachman, I don't even need to bother coming to such a din Torah. Sholach lei. But Rav Nachman sends a message to Rav Dimi, don't think that way. Eloi Osis, you know what, if you don't come for this din Torah, machinolach the silver delay maba doma. I will strike you with a thorn that hurts but doesn't cause any blood to come out, meaning, in other words, I'm going to put you in cheren. Nidui at least, whatever, not cherem, which is a harsher thing, but nidui at least. A person refuses a summons from Beis Din, then he can be put in nidui. So Rav Nachman is saying, you think there's no reason to come for the din Torah, but the fact is, there is actually a very good reason, as we're going to see, And therefore, if you don't come, then you're going to be put in nidui. So the Yad Ramah actually says on that it is true that a dayan should put somebody in nidui if he doesn't come. But when it's someone like Rav Nachman who's a real dayan who deserves the post of dayan, then he can do that. If you have, in other words, that the Yad Ramah is implying, if the dayan is not of that caliber, then maybe he shouldn't be putting people in nidui for refusing his summons. Anyway. So Omalahu the Sadi. So when Rav Dini finally comes, Omalahu the Sadi, so Rav Nachman says to the Edim, hey, if you have a Maisa, what exactly happened over here? Tell me the details. So they tell him, this is what she said. When she called for Rav Dini and he came, she said, Vaid Komisa Hach Itza. Woe that woman, meaning I, am going to die. And she was saying, in other words, it's too bad. My brother doesn't even want to come to me. I'm not even going to have the opportunity to see him one more time before I die. You could think to yourself. I mean, you could think maybe she's done this kind of thing before. Maybe Rav Dini was tired of dealing with her. Emotional blackmail, you'd almost call it. But whatever. The point is, anyway. So Omalahu said, Rav Nachman says, you know what? That makes a big difference. Im Kain Hava, if she actually, when she was giving the matana, she said so that she's do. She said that she's doing it because she figures she's going to die. Then that amounts to have a mitzava machmas nisa. Then that's a case where she's giving the tzava, these instructions only because she's going to die. So in other words, even though she didn't say explicitly that it's a matnas chimera, but that's the implication by mentioning that, by crafting over the fact that she's going to die. So therefore, so kinyan or not, it doesn't matter. It's like a tnai. It's as if there's an implicit tnai that it's only going to be in effect only if she dies. And Rav Nachman says, umetzava machmas nisa choizer. And the fact is, when a person is metzava machmas nisa, then they can retract. Even though, now you're going to say, haven't we been talking all this time about the difference between a matnas chimera bekuloi or bemetzasei? But that was all we were talking about when he didn't say explicitly that he's doing it because he's about to die. So then we would say there's a difference between whether he's giving away all of it or only some of it. But here where she mentioned the fact that she's going to die, therefore, then it doesn't matter, miktsas or the whole thing, even when there's a kinyan in this case, even in that case, she would be able to retract the gift. So Rav Nachman says that's that. Here, Rav Dini, you thought, one second. So here, Rav Dini, you thought there's no reason to come for the Din Torah because she's stam hacking a chaynik. It turns out actually that she has a very good logical reason to say that she should get back the gift. Which, by the way, actually, then in that case, so if Rav Dini had realized that, then he wouldn't have bothered with the shiur or anything like that. The whole point was he figured he has an ironclad case over here. He doesn't need to do anything more. But it turns out Rav Nachman tells him there's one particular detail that you didn't know, and that's going to prevent you from being able to keep that gift. Because you missed out that one point, the fact that she used that expression, I'm going to die, and therefore that makes it different, and therefore, in effect, there was a tnai involved, and therefore she can retract the gift even though it was mixas and even though there was a kinyan and all of that. Now, you were going to say something?
The case assumes that, yeah, I mean, it's obvious that this woman had deep psychological problems, and to assume that she's a shchiv merah, just because she states it, isn't that, I mean, something purely excessive?
Well,
anybody can claim they're shchiv merah.
No, because the fact is there were edim over there, and all these cases of matnas chivra now we're talking about, there are always edim involved, and in fact the Rashbam points out on the Mishnah that generally speaking, First of all, well, either there were Edim, and the Edim can testify that she was a Shivmara, or that the Shtar actually says, the Rashbam brings a Loshen, the Loshen that the Gemara is going to bring in a couple of more blah, where it actually says in the Shtar, in so many words, that he gave these instructions when he was sick and lying and lying on his deathbed. So in this case, the Edim could see, in other words, objectively, they could see that she is in a situation of Shivmara, where she's likely to die from this. In this particular case, it happened that not, apparently previous times also, but nevertheless, the Edim, they're not necessarily doctors. From what they see, it looks like she's soon going to die. Now, what happened after this? I guess we could assume that next time she tried this, or if Jimmy was a little smarter, I guess, but the Gemara doesn't record what happened then.
You catch him in the mind.
The story basically was that his sister, I'll tell you afterwards. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Onward.
Anybody can claim that Shemara, even with Edim.
Where a person who's deathly ill writes out a matana. Let's explain. If you come on time, then you'll. Next time you come on time, then you'll. Yeah, you were going to say? Yeah. Okay.
I'm saying anybody can claim, even based on Edim, that they're Shemara. It doesn't make them Shemara.
That may be, but the Edim can only go based on what they see. So they're testifying to Reb Nachman, the way that we saw her lying in bed, to our understanding, looks like she was a Shivmara, looks like she's on her deathbed. Now again, you might say, for example, that she was a hypochondriac. Mm-hmm. You might say that every time she's claiming that she's about to die and she's not. But listen, you could say the same thing any time that two Edim testify on something, right? Two Edim is two Edim. That's that, you know.
If she's lying on a deathbed, that means that person gets
So it means that the matana, if she dies, then the person gets the matana. But if she recovers, then they don't. Then they should revoke it. So those are all the various cases that the Gemara had brought where there was a simon for all of them again where a simon with the various names that were involved in these stories over here, all of them involving various cases where women wrote out their nechassim to their relatives for one reason or another. Itmar. So now we have a discussion on the point.
The way the halacha stands today, don't the Edim, any type of aid can come and declare that, yeah, that person is a Shemara, or they have to have some professional background to assume a thing like that.
I don't know that they have to have some professional background. The definition of a Shemara is that they're very weak, toshash kol koichai, like they're very, very sick. And they're very, very sick, and it looks like they're likely to die from this. And then we have, they could recover or they could not. But basically, the basic definition as brought in Shulchan Aruch is that a shivmana is their whole strength is gone. They're not able to walk. They're not able to walk on the street, and they're stuck in bed. The poskim achronim talk about, for example, you could have somebody who's dangerously ill and knows about it, even if he's not physically lying in bed. Imagine, for example, a person who's a person in Rachman al-Fan has cancer or something, and they know that in Bederach HaTeva, they're different types, true, but whatever. The point is, they may not be right now lying in bed, but contemporary poskim talk about that might be a shivmana as well. The idea behind it, we learned a few blot ago, the idea is the Chacham made a takana. We don't want that the poor person is going to think, you know what, Hugh, I'm giving instruction and nobody's going to listen to them because I'm not doing a kinyan or I'm not whatever, and therefore it's going to cause them mental anguish, and that might even cause them to. That's why the Chachamim made the sakana that divrei shivmana k'ksuvin v'chimasurin, that a shivmana, whatever they say, is considered as though it's written and signed, even if there's no shtar, even if there's no kinyan, etc. So that's the Egem. That's the Egem, yeah. Onward. Itmar.
So yeah. Let's say, one second. Two Edim come and testify that this patient is a Shivmara. Then there's one or two physicians who come and say, no, this patient is not a Shivmara. What's
then
the
you have, as usual, two Edim. Then you have two Edim against two Edim. That's a typical case. We have two Edim contradicting one another, and then we say we throw out the whole thing.
You have one physician.
You have one physician
that comes afterwards.
Yeah.
You have one physician, and you have two Edim who are not professionals. What's the halacha?
a dayan would have to figure it out then. A dayan, I mean, in principle, a dayan can just say, listen, two edim is two edim, that's that. But you have a concept, Tosfos mentions in a few places in Shas, you have a concept called, that we say that a dayan should judge din emes la'amita. Why the double expression is because a dayan has the responsibility not just to follow black letter halacha, but also to ferret out the actual facts. So, for example, he might realize, to give you an example, he might realize that these two edim don't know what they're talking about, so what's he going to do? He's going to cross-examine them very carefully and find, eventually, and trip them up in something where it's going to turn out that they really don't know what they're talking about, and then he has an ability, al pi halacha, to throw out their edim. So, yeah, that would be the kind of thing where a Rav has to also use his, as they call it, the fifth Shulchan, the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch, to work out these kinds of things. Yeah, it's a silly question. Meaning. Okay, yeah. Onward. Itma. Matnas Shchivmana b'michtas. Suppose that a Shchivmana is giving away only some of his nechosim, and there's no kinyan involved. Now, all this time we've been talking about where he gave all of his nechosim, and then we said that the din of a matnas Shchivmana is that, on the one hand, it is effective without a kinyan or without anything else. On the other hand, we said that if he recovers, then the whole thing is revoked. So now he's doing a matnas shchivmana b'miktas. He's giving only some of his nechosim. And the idea is, in other words, apparently he figures that he's likely to recover. Therefore, he wants to keep some of the nechosim for himself. Well, so Amru Rabbanan Kamei de Rava, the Chachamim in the Yeshiva in front of Rava said Mishmei de Marzutra, Breder of Nachman. They told over in the name of Marzutra, the son of Rab Nachman, the Omer Mishmei de Rab Nachman, who in turn said in the name of his father Rab Nachman that a matnas shchivmana b'miktas, where it's only some of the nechosim, harehi kematnas bori, v'harehi kematnas shchivmana. It's a hybrid a little bit. It has some of the dinim of matnas bori of a healthy person's matana, and it has some of the dinim of matnas shchivmana. It's like a matnas bori in the sense that if he recovers, he doesn't get to retract it, as we learned in the Mishnah. Now, just like, in other words, a healthy person, if he makes a kinyan, if he gives a matana to somebody else and makes a kinyan on it, then that's it. It's irrevocable. Well, the same way over here, since it was only b'miktas, then we would say the same thing. It's irrevocable. But the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash said to Rava that Vahareyi Kamatna Shchivmana, on the other hand, it can also be considered to a certain extent, like a Matna Shchivmana, Deloid Boya Kinyan, namely that no Kinyan is necessary for it to take effect. So if the Shchivmana does end up dying, then the other person gets it. And if he recovers, then also the other person gets it. Because either way, even though it's only been mixed us, for the same reason, in order that he shouldn't have this mental anguish that what I want isn't going to happen, therefore the Chachamim would say that it has the power of a Matna Shchivmana to that extent. Omalahu Rava, but when the Chachamim said that to Rava, he said, so he said, Lava Minalahu, he says, haven't I told you before, Loi Titlu Buki Sriki Rav Nachman, don't hang empty jugs on Rav Nachman, which is a figure of speech, meaning, in other words, don't attribute to Rav Nachman things that are so illogical things, things that have no time, things that don't make sense. What you're saying, you're saying that Rav Nachman said that can't possibly be correct. Let me tell you what Rav Nachman actually said. No, such a matana is like a matnas bari for all purposes, and it won't be effective without a kinyan. No kinyan, then no matana.
Then what's a kinyan?
A kinyan, you know what a kinyan is.
What's a kinyan here?
The kinyan would be that he makes a kinyan, that he makes a kinyan in front of Adu, he makes a kinyan soda that I'm handing and I'm giving you, that I'm not necessarily the shah itself, but I'm giving you, I'm making a kinyan soda that with it you're going to acquire these nechosim. So it needs a kinyan. Okay, the Rashba says doesn't really mean necessarily only a kinyan. Any other kind of kinyan that would work, any meshicha or hagbah or chalich or whatever, any of the regular methods of kinyanim. So the Gemara says, Eisvei Rava l'Rav Nachman. Now, having, and now Rava had quoted that later on to the Chachmei Yeshiva in the name of Rav Nachman, but now when he first heard that din from Rav Nachman, he asked Rav Nachman, how could you say such a thing? The Mishnah had said, Shir Kalko Koshu Matnosa Kayemes, that when the Shivana is giving his Nechosim, if he kept for himself a certain amount of Karka, on the face of it, Koshu means any amount, we said that actually it means, Rav Yehuda had said it means enough for him to live off of, whatever, but if he kept for himself some of it, Matnosa Kayemes, then the gift is irrevocable and he can't take it back. My love de l'economine. So Rava says, shouldn't we assume that Mishnah is talking about where they made a where they didn't make a kinyan? Because after all, a regular matnas shivana doesn't require a kinyan, and still then it's effective. So it sounds like the Mishnah is saying that the only difference is whether it was b'kulay or b'miktsasi. So Nachman says loy de l'economine. No, the Mishnah is talking about where they did make a kinyan. Rava says, Yehochi, a Masefa. So they made a Kenyan, so therefore it works. But if it had been without a Kenyan, it was a Maton of a Mixtus. It was only some of his Nechosim, so it wouldn't work. So Rava asks, Yehochi, a Masefa. If you're going to say that, though, look at the Sefa, where the Mishnah continues, Loi Shir Karka Kol Shehu, a Matnosa Kayemes. That it says, if he didn't leave for himself any Karka and he recovers, then his Matona is not valid and he can revoke it. Now, if you're talking about that there was a Kenyan, Amai Ein Matnosa Kayemes. Why wouldn't the Matana be in effect? After all, there was a Kenyan involved over here. Now, we're going to learn actually on the next Amud, we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, that Shmuel actually says that where there's a Matnas Shivra that has a Kenyan, Shmuel is not sure, we're going to learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, that Shmuel is not sure whether actually that works or not, because in Kenyan La'achamissa, how could the Kenyan take effect after he dies? So therefore, the Rashba actually explains that the Gemara's question is, if we're talking about that there's a Kenyan, then what does the Mishnah mean that we're saying that if he ends up dying, the other guy does get it? After all, the Mishnah is saying, if he recovers, then he can retract. But meaning, in other words, but if he dies, the other guy gets it. And if he recovers, then the other guy doesn't get it. So you have the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, that we're going to learn tomorrow. According to Rav, since there was a Kenyan involved, then it's irrevocable. And according to Shmuel, it doesn't matter. Even if he didn't die, even if he dies, there's nothing doing because the Kenyan doesn't take effect. La'achamisa. So what is the case where the Mishnah is saying, where on the one hand, if he dies, the other guy is going to get it. But on the other hand, if he doesn't die, the guy is not going to get it because it's going to be revoked. If you're going to tell me that there's a Kenyan involved over there, according to neither Rav or Shmuel, can you say that those two dinim would apply? We're talking in the Sefer of the Mishnah. Yeah, that's what we're saying. So therefore, Rava is asking, given that the Sefer is obviously talking about where there's no Kenyan, otherwise there's no way to make that Sefer work, according to either Rav or Shmuel, then in the Reisha, there was also no Kenyan, and therefore, what are you telling me? That where he gave Miktsas, it wouldn't work unless there was a Kenyan. Rav Nachman, you're telling us that there's no, that in the, if there's miktsas, then you need a kinyan for it to take effect. It comes out from by analyzing the Mishnah that no kinyan is being done.
Why can't I say Shmuel is in the Mishnah kinyan?
One second, please. Pinchas. Shmuel is not arguing on the Mishnah. Shmuel is explaining.
Okay.
He's saying, now you're going to learn tomorrow, Bez the Shem.
Yes.
Where you have a Matnas Shchimera, that also involves a Kinyan. So he said, okay. I'm a Shchimera, I am giving my Nechosin to Pliny, and I'm also writing, and I'm also doing a Kinyan. Okay. Does that work? Shmuel says it does not, or it may not, because the fact is, that Kenyan can't take effect l'achamisa. Whereas Rav says, on the contrary, it means it's all the stronger, because it means that he has both Matnas Shchimera and a Kenyan. Now, Rava is saying, in the Sefer of our Mishnah, it wouldn't work to say that there was a Kenyan, because then it's not going to work according to either Rav or Shmuel. Right. Then you can't say that it would be, if the guy dies, then the Makabel receives it, and if he doesn't die, if he recovers, then the Makabel doesn't get it. Because according to Rav, either way he would get it, and according to Shmuel, either way he would not get it. Therefore, necessarily, the Sefer is talking about there's no Kenyan. Therefore, in the Reisha, right, there can't be a Kenyan. Now, how are you, Rav Nachman, telling us, says Rava, that in the Reisha, there has to be a Kenyan for it to be a Matana B'miktas, for it to work? Yeah, now, Rav Moshe, what do you want to say?
The question is, when he makes a Kenyan, the Kenyan is made before he dies, not after or the time of his
obviously,
death.
Obviously, the Kenyan is made to take effect. We'll learn about it more tomorrow, Baz Hashem, but the Kenyan is, to the Shmuel is saying, the Kenyan may only be meant to take effect after he dies, and that doesn't work. We're going to learn that tomorrow, Baz Hashem. We're going to talk about it.
No, I understand, but... Yeah. But yeah. why can he say that a kinyan is going to take effect later than it actually is made? Where does he get that from?
So we'll learn that tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We're going to say he might be saying that he wants to do with a shtar and ein shtar la'achamisa, or he might be wanting to do with a kinyan, and or he might be wanting to do with a kinyan. So we don't know. So then we're going to learn about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem. The point being, in other words,
okay,
that
let's assume yeah. that
So that's the point.
Let's assume there's no shtar.
If there's no star, then that's not what we're going to talk about. We're talking about where he's Kosev Kol Nechosev, that Rashbam points out at the beginning of the next Omud. We're talking about Kosev Kol Nechosev. He's writing all his Nechosim, but in addition, he also made a Kinyan, and therefore Shmuel is saying that since it says a Kinyan, since it has a kinyan, then maybe he means for it to take effect using the kinyan, or maybe he means to make it take effect using the shtar, and it's not going to work for achamisa.
One second. When you write a shtar
so you have an opinion,
and you make a kinyan.
Yeah.
When you write a shtar and you make a kinyan immediately after you've written the shtar, the kinyan is valid.
That's fine, but here we're talking about a matnas chivrinah, which is a special case. So again, let's not get too sidetracked. This is going to be something that we'll learn more about tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Right now, the point that's relevant to us is that Rava is asking Rav Nachman, our Mishnah seems to be talking about a case where there was no kinyan, so what are you telling me? A matana b'mitzvah requires a kinyan. So Omale, so Rav Nachman answers him, that no, a shchivna who writes all his nechosim to somebody else, alpha pisha konu miyadei, even though there was a kinyan involved as well, omad choizer, nevertheless, if he recovers, he can still retract it, because again, because since he gave away all of his nechosim and didn't leave anything for himself, biyadua shaloi hayimetzava ella machmas misa. Then we know that he was only giving these instructions only because he was going to die. So even though there was a kinyan, then nevertheless it's in effect al tnai, only if he's going to die, and therefore when he recovers then he can get it back. So that's the answer. So the answer is, in other words, that you're asking if there was a kinyan in the sefer where he gave away everything, why ain't matnas kayemas? The answer is because that's how it is. Because with a matnas shlemana, kinyan or not, nevertheless im omad choizer. So that explains what the Mishnah had said. And therefore, so yes, you can say in the sefer there was a kinyan, and in the reisha also when it was miktas nechosav, then there was also a kinyan.
You can argue in the opposite way. You can say he did the kinyan just to show that it was irrevocable.
No, and actually that the Rashba explains exactly that. Even if he told them to write in the shtar that we're making a kinyan, adding on top of this matana, so that shows, in other words, he's making the kinyan in order to strengthen it. Nevertheless, because he's doing it machmas misa, then nevertheless we know anan sadi, we can in effect be edim that he wouldn't give away all of the nechosim and leave himself completely penniless unless it was that he expected to die. And therefore, if he doesn't die, then imam an choizer, and then if he does recover, imam an choizer. So the Gemara continues. Eisvei Rav Mesharshia l'Rava. So in turn, Rav Mesharshia asks Rava, so you're telling me again. So now that we established that, now that Rava went through his question on Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman explained it to him, so now Rava is telling the Talmudim in his own yeshiva that when the Shivmara does a matana b'miktas, it requires a kinyan, and otherwise it's not going to be effective. So now, Eisvei Rav Mesharshia l'Rava. So the Mesharshia says to Rava, I have a contradiction from a further Mishnah in our Peah. The Mishnah says, Maisa be'iman shal b'nei Roichel. It happened with the mother of the sons of Roichel. Now, Roichel literally means a peddler, but Rashbam says over here, Shem Adam, it's a name, that was his name. His name was Roichel. So his wife, Tahoisa Choyla, she was sick, she was a shrivana. For Omra, she says, Tvinosim kvinosi libiti. My kvinosi should go to my daughter. What is kvinosi? Kvina is the basic word. Kvinosi would be my kvina. The Rashbam explains that it's like a clasp that's used to keep, women wear it on the front of their blouse to keep their, on the front of their blouse or the front of their dress to keep the two ends of it together. So it doesn't gap open and expose them. So the French word he uses, nushka, is in a similar word in modern French that basically means a clasp or a brooch or something like that. Tosfos actually later on in the Perek on that Mishnah discusses that and says maybe not necessarily based on other sources, kvinasi might mean something like a shawl or something. Whatever the case, it was something special to her and she wanted to leave it to her daughter.
What's the name in French?
The word that Ashbam uses in French is nuska, nun vav shin kuf aleph. So in modern French, I think there's a word similar to it without the S. But whatever, it's like a clasp to hold a dress closed or something. Anyway. So the Rashbam says it's that. Tosfos says it might mean a shawl or something. Whatever the case, v'hu b'shneim osem mona. This thing, this kvina, whatever it is worth 12 mona, which is quite a lot of money. Umesa, and then the mother died. V'kimu dvareha. And the Chachamim said that what she said is valid, and that thing has to be given to the daughter. Now, there was no kinyan or anything involved over here, and it's only matana b'miktzas, because that wasn't all of her nechasim, it was one particular thing of hers, and we still see that it was enough with only dvarim. So the answer is, the Gemara says, no, chosim metzava machmas misa. There, she actually mentioned that she's doing it that because she's about to die. So now, When Rav Nachman was saying before that you need a kinyan, again, that was where he didn't say anything about he's going to die.
The fact that he's
about to die, and we see him lying in bed, and weak, and soon going to die, then therefore we say, but again, if it was b'kuloi, then you don't need a kinyan, but if it was b'miktsas, then you do. But here it was a matter of mitzava machmas misa. She said explicitly that I'm giving this because I'm going to die soon, and therefore that would work even without. That would work even without a kinyan. If she died. It was a matana b'miktas. So no, we said if she recovers, then no, because a matana b'miktas. We said if she recovers, she doesn't get it back.
So she doesn't.
Okay, fine. The Gemara continues. Esrei Ravina l'Rabba. Tosfos points out that in that case, the fact is, yeah, that since it was a matana b'miktas, she wouldn't get it back anyway, so what does it matter that the mother died in the end, and Rava presumably wouldn't disagree with everything that we've been saying, we just said before, that Rav Nachman had said, that it's like a matnas bari, and therefore it's irrevocable. And Rav Nachman himself says something similar a few blocks ago. So in turn, you have on this Tosfos, there's a Marshal that discusses the Tosfos, and we're talking about when Rav Nachman had said a few blocks ago, Matnas Chidmen Ab Miktas Eini Yochel Lachzer, he can't change his mind. So the Marshal says he has to be talking about any case with or without a kinyan, and then Marshal in turn has a long, long discussion about that, about the ins and outs of that. But the bottom line is, in other words, so on the face of it, we see no kinyan was necessary over there, and the answer is that's not a classic matnas chivra. That's actually a different case called mitzava machmas misa, where she said explicitly, "I'm going to die," and that has other dinim. Next, the Gemara says, "Esrei Ravina l'Rava." So Ravina in turn says, "I have a kasha on you, Rava." We learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, "Ha'oimer tnu get zela ishi." A man says, "Give this get to my wife." Or he says, give this document of freeing, this emancipation document, to my Eved, Knani. If then he dies, lo yitnu la'acha misa. They should not give the get, or the shtar shichur, after he dies, because in get la'acha misa, and none of these things can apply after he dies.
So isn't that get, has to be like straight up, can be like through someone?
No, get can be given through a shliach.
For example, the kinyan can be through a shliach, they can take advantage.
Never mind that. You were talking about that he gave it to a shliach to give to her. If he was still alive, it would work then. So, on the other hand, if he says, tnu mona l'ploini or mes, on the other hand, if he says, give a mona to ploini, and then he dies, yitnu l'acha misa, that they can give after he dies, because there, you have matnas shchivmera, that's a matnas shchivmera. So, uh, Well, to be exact, the Gemara in Gittin discusses over there whether we're talking about a matnas bori or a matnas chibra, but the Gemara is following the opinion of Rapapa that says in the Gemara over there that says that we're talking about a matnas chibra. Tosfos discusses at some length about that. One particular thing is the girsa tnu get zel ishti, which implies that he already has the get in his hand and he's giving it to the shliach, and he already gave it to the shliach, and he's telling the shliach to deliver it to her. Where there we say he can't deliver it after he's dead, as opposed to if the gear says snu get l'ishti without the word zeh, then it would mean that he hasn't even given him the get yet. And Tosfos discusses at some length about the difference between those two possibilities and so forth. So the point is we see from that he said that we do it after he died because it's matnas chibra. So the question is, again, you see that it works even without a kinyan. Well, the Gemara asked, how do we know that it was without a kinyan? And the answer is, Jumia de get, because after all, the Mishnah is telling it together with the din of a get. Ma get lavra kinyan, when it comes to a get, there's no kinyan sudr, is irrelevant when it comes to a get. You just give it to the shliach and that's that. Apparently, this case of the money is also there was no kinyan, and yet the Mishnah is saying that it's valid, and you give it even after he died. So the Gemara answers, Hosam Nami b'mitzava machmas misa. Fine, you can answer there that also he explicitly said that he's doing it because he's about to die. Okay, the Gemara says, so that's one possible answer. Rav Huna b'rede Rishua Omar, Rav Huna b'rede Rishua.
In the case of the get, you mean?
No, in the case of the get, you can't give it lachamisa. We're saying in the parallel case of the mana, you can give it lachamisa because he was mitzava machmas misa. He said, I know I'm going to die soon, and I want you to give this mana to Pliny. So since he said it like that, then therefore they can do it lahamisa. So then it doesn't require a kinyan. But had it been where he hadn't explicitly said that, but it was only mitzvah, then like Rav Nachman had said, it would require a kinyan. Rav Huna b'Rei de Yeshua explains, here's another answer that you can give to both of these questions. We had Rav Mesharshia's question about the case involving the brooch, and we have Ravina's question about the case with the money. So again, we gave answers by both of them that we're talking about. It's mitzava machmas misa, where he or she said explicitly, I'm doing it because I'm about to die. Rav Huna b'Rei de Yeshua Omar gives a different answer. Mitzava machmas misa ba'alma boya kinyan. Usually, even when it's machmas misa, even when he's saying, because I'm going to die, usually it would require a kinyan. In these two cases, v'chitanya hani masni yosa, but these two mishnayos that we mentioned that don't need a kinyan, b'machalek kol nechosav, he's talking about where he is giving all of his nechosim to various people, dahi matnas shribana shavua, and therefore it's a regular matnas shribana. In other words, in the case of the clasp, the Mishnah only mentions the one point that she said, my clasp should go to my daughter. And then the Chachamim were Mekayim it, which we're going to talk about. Yeah, you would think, what's the Chiddush in that? We're going to learn later on Kufnun Vav. When we learn this Mishnah, then we'll learn what the Chiddush in it was. And then the Gemara will learn what the Chiddush in it was. But the point is that she wasn't only saying that. She was also saying, this brooch should go to my daughter, and this other thing should go to Pliny, and this other thing to Pliny, and so forth. So therefore, she's giving away everything. And the same thing over here. When we're saying, give a money to Pliny, he's also saying, and do this and this with that, and do that and that with that. So therefore, Sarah Honabred Yerushua says, the Mishnah is only focusing on the one mana that he said, but in fact we're talking about that he's giving out the rest of his nechosim as well. And so the Gemara finishes off with Hilchasa.
And therefore,
kol nechosim. So therefore, it's kol nechosim. And even Rav Nachman is not saying that with kol nechosim you need a kinyan. He's saying only with mitzvah nechosim you need a kinyan. So therefore, that would explain why the Mishnayos are not mentioning a kinyan, because where it's kol nechosim, no kinyan is necessary. So the Gemara finishes off. The Hilchsa Matnas Shchivna Mitzvah.
Now that's the halacha.
Well, so that's the Gemara is going to say now. The Hilchsa. Here's the bottom line halacha. Matnas Shchivna Mitzvah Boya Kinyan. A Matnas Shchivna where he gave away only some of it does require a kinyan. Like Rava quoted Rav Nachman. Like Rava had learned from Rav Nachman and asked on him the questions earlier, and Rav Nachman had explained it. But Afa Gav Demes, and that is true even if the person does die in the end. Because even though you would say, wait a minute, he died, so therefore that's it. It's a done deal. No, you still require that there was for there to have been a kinyan in order for that matana b'mitzas to have taken effect in the first place. But on the other hand, mitzava machmas misa. On the other hand, if he explicitly says that he's doing it because he's about to die, or actually it doesn't even really need to be that it doesn't actually mean that he says I'm doing it because I'm about to die. We had the example before with Reb Dimi's sister who just said oyvei, I'm going to die and I'm not going to see my brother. So that's enough. Where you see that we see clearly from what he's saying that he's doing it because he's about to die. Loy boy a kinyan, then you don't need a kinyan. Then you don't need a kinyan. The mitzvah adds a detail. If he says me'achshav, if he says it should take effect retroactive to now, then yeah, then that would require a kinyan. V'hu demes, and that would only apply then if he died. But omad choizer, but if he recovers, then he can retract it. V'afagav dekonu minei, even though there was a kinyan. So in short, in other words, when we're talking about it, so in short, we can summarize as follows. When the Shchiv Menach gives all the Nechosim, no Kinyan is necessary. And in fact, if there was a Kinyan, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow what happens. That's not so simple. If it was B'mikseth, then you require a Kinyan. It requires a Kinyan. But if you have Mitzava Machmas Misa, whether it was B'kulay or whether B'mikseth, then you don't need a Kinyan. And in the case of a matna shchivna where he didn't say anything, then if it was all of it im oman choizer, if he recovers, then he gets it all back. And if he doesn't, and if he doesn't recover, then the other guy gets it. And again, no kinyan was necessary because it was all of it. And if it was mitzas, then a kinyan is necessary. But once that kinyan is done, then because it was mitzas, then it's irrevocable, and he doesn't get it back even if he recovers. But again, there's a difference.
Why is there? So is the case of the mikvah in need of a kinyan?
So the reason, so we're saying that when the case, because we're distinguishing between shchiv merah, where he's not saying I'm doing it, or not saying or indicating that I'm doing it because I'm about to die, but rather he's just, we see that he's sick in bed, and he is giving out some of his nechosim. So then we're saying, on the one hand, so we're saying it's completely like a matnas body. We said it's like a matnas body in the sense that it's irrevocable. Even if he recovers, he's still not getting it back. But it also is like a matnas body in that it's also like a matnas body in that without a kinyan, it's not going to be effective. That's what we're saying. The first Chachamim of Rava's Yeshiva had thought to say that it's somewhat like a matnas shchivna and doesn't require and doesn't require a kinyan. And Rava had explained to them that no, that's wrong. That's not what Reb Nachman said. And the logic behind it again is because since we're saying that it's not like it doesn't have a special dinim of matnas shchivna as far as im omad choizer, that if he recovers he gets it back, then it also doesn't have a special din of a matnas shchivna insofar as that it shouldn't require a kinyan like any other matnas body, it would require a kinyan. But again, we're saying there's a difference between that and mitzava machmas misa, where he's explicitly saying, I am doing this because I'm soon going to die. I mean, he doesn't say that quite so explicitly, but we can see from what he's saying that it's because he's about to die, then we're saying it doesn't require a kinyan.
So in one case, he's explicitly saying that he's going to die, but in the case where he's not explicitly saying that he's going to die, and he wants to give some of it, he requires
a kinyan. Reb Nachman is telling us, and Robert confirms that this is what Reb Nachman said, he needs a kinyan, and otherwise it's ineffective. Yeah.
So there's two conditions. Number one, that he doesn't say that he's going to die, but he looks like he is. And number two, that he wants to give part of his nechassim, not all of the nechassim.
Those are the,
is that correct?
That is the case where we need a kinyan, correct. Any other case, we would not. If he's saying explicitly it's because I'm about to die, no kinyan is necessary. And if he's a shchiv merah, not saying so, but he's giving everything, also no kinyan is necessary, right?
Right. So why is a kinyan necessary when these two conditions apply? Why? What's the reason?
Because since he's not explicitly saying that it's because he's going to die, and since he's giving only mikzas nechosav, and if he's really doing it because he's about to die, he would give away everything, then we say that it's considered like a matnas body. And a matnas body has to have a kinyan.
But, yeah, no, I understand. But what I don't understand is he looks as if he's going to die, and there's two edim who are willing to testify. In this
That's
case?
Fine. Nonetheless, though, so if he had given away everything, then fine. No kinyan is necessary. But because he's giving away only some, and after all, look, I mean, he has to realize, you know, if he really is going to die, then why is he keeping anything for himself? He can't take anything of it after he's gone. So then in that case, we consider it fully like a matnas body.